Hello, welcome to the Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about racism and sexism in comics and how it kills the originality of these characters. Of course, my co-host JT from Saskatoon.
Hello.
Also with us is Red Ink.
What up?
All right.
And so we are most definitely not talking about reverse racism.
There's no fucking such thing as reverse racism. Racism is just fucking racism.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if you're black, white, red, or fucking yellow, or a purple people eater, you're fucking racist either way.
One-eyed, one-horned, yellow. Okay, so I wanted to talk about this because I've seen a surge recently where characters who've had long-established traits, abilities, and personalities that have been long since established have started to be being reverted into female versions of their male counterparts, and that sort of pisses me off. A great example of this is She-Hulk, Jen Walters. For people who, you know, since Jen's earliest days in the comics, her very first origin issue, She-Hulk was never a rage machine. She was never an uncontrollable ball of rage and anger that loses mental capacity once she turns. Jen, I wouldn't say had complete control over it, but she relished in it. She had her faculties as She-Hulk, and she was this character that embraced and loved who she was as She-Hulk. And, you know, in the last couple of years, they've been trying to push this idea that in Jen is the same Hulk smash as Bruce, down to where she loses mental capacity as She-Hulk, and they drew her bulkier and less feminine as well. And that pisses me off.
You kind of got it wrong there, Ben, because you're actually missing a major event that precipitated that change in the comics.
Yeah,
if I might explain.
She took a missile to the boob.
No, she got the snot beat out of her by Thanos in Civil War II. She was put in a fucking coma for a while, and she's basically dealing with post-traumatic stress.
But at the end of her solo series, she got over and she was back to where she was for the last 20 years or 20
Ben,
plus years.
Have you ever met anyone that's dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder? Because I have, and they might seem fine, but they're not fine. Like, they might never be fine. So maybe for a time, Jen Walters got her shit together, but, you know, as the history of Marvel Comics has proven, anyone that's a gamma-based mutate or mutant or superhero or supervillain of any stripe, they're not all... Very rarely do they experience long periods of mental stability. Now, granted, yes, back in the day, she relished, in the early days, she kind of relished in the savage She-Hulk, finger quotes. You know, stuff like that. You have in the long history of her being the Jade Giantess and breaking the fourth wall and loving life, that happened too. But, you know, people that get beat like that don't always get their shit back together. And granted, it's more a business thing than any sort of, you know, getting her healthy again. There's like, well, it kind of works for her to be savage like that, but maybe she's still dealing with shit. I mean, you know, she gets put in a coma by Thanos, and then her cousin's killed by a fellow Avenger, and then he comes back, and apparently he can't die now. So, I mean, she's probably messed up.
Red, your thoughts.
My thoughts is, JT has a point. She is dealing with post-traumatic stress. However, it's a dumb fucking storyline.
It's a crutch.
Why would you give it to her? Like, why would you... She's a perfect character as it is. She was pretty much Marvel's Wonder Woman. Even though she didn't have the credibility as Wonder Woman.
Or the prestige, but everyone who read her loved her.
Yes. So why... If something works, why change it? The reason why they changed it is they were trying to get on the whole... I'm a victim, me too, fucking hype train.
I certainly think they're trying to draft off that, but I don't think they're going specifically for that.
They were going specifically for that, and they did a retarded job of doing it.
The other problem I see, again, is that they're making her more like Bruce, you know? And I resent that, because she had so much originality that she didn't need to be like Bruce Banner. She was fine being herself. Yes, her powers came from gamma radiation, but other than that, she was a completely different character.
Yeah, but, you know, like, the whole thing that's been established in Hulk comics is Bruce is, like, the Savage Hulk is due to him seeing his dad kill his mom and then underlying guilt for killing his father at his mother's gravesite years later.
That was forgotten, that storyline.
I don't think it's been forgotten. It just hasn't been referenced. But the point is,
I hope it stays there, too.
Okay.
But put it in the same fucking dirt pile as those E.T. games that were fucking buried in the middle of the California desert.
Okay, clearly Red disagrees with me, folks, but my point is,
Nevada desert, by the way, but go on.
Yeah, but the, you know, there are underlying reasons why, like, even if you discount all him killing his dad, like, Bruce Banner, like, the original Bruce, he was incredibly repressed. He's this brilliant man that's being called a nerd and a milksop by this asshole with a big mustache and chomping on a cigar all day long saying, you know, in my army, you know, all that kind of bullshit, you know, it even comes from that. And that, you know, they're, again, Jen got hurt real bad. Why wouldn't she be dealing with some shit afterwards? But I get what you're saying, right? Is, yeah, they're going, it's this era of Me Too and Time's Up and all this. Like, they're trying to use that in some respect, but it's not going for good stories. I mean, it's interesting, but I think by the end of that last She-Hulk run, I think it happened too quickly. Like, it was almost too easy. You know, you can't just be like, sweep this shit under the rug after a few months, and you're, again, like I said, you can't just heal whole like that. It's like the analogy from the time travel analogy from the Flash TV show. You know, every time you change the past and you put stuff back together, it's never quite the same.
The other problem I have is if you actually read that previous She-Hulk series, which they just called Hulk, because they were pushing Jen Walters to be the one and only Hulk, she had her own Grey Hulk arc. And I like Jen Walters as this tall Amazonian figure of femininity and power wrapped into one. And when artists really rock it well. I never liked where they make her look, you know, I'm just going to say it looks gross when they pile too many muscles on her. It looks gross. And
it doesn't look gross when they do that to Bruce?
Men and women have different shaped bodies, JT.
I know that, Ben. And if, you know, they pile the shit ton of muscles on Jen Walters, is it not gross when they do that to Bruce Banner?
I think you're going for a fallacy of an argument that men and women have
the same
bodies.
No, I'm asking, why is it gross when they do that to women? Is
because
it not also gross when they do
it? They have different shaped bodies.
Yeah, I know. That's not the point. It's like,
that's
why
exactly
is it gross?
The point. Because the body shapes are different, okay? That's why.
And why is that gross, though? Like, I don't understand why that's a problem. I mean, we have literally almost 100 years worth of comics history with guys being more muscular than is humanly possible without the benefit of anabolic steroids, and we're fine with that, but it's gross when we do that to women. Like, why is that a problem? That's what I'm asking.
It number one,
if you find it distasteful, I understand that, but not everybody finds that wrong.
There's no femininity to it, and Jen Walters was a very feminine character.
Well, there wasn't a whole lot of femininity to Chyna the Wrestler, but, you know, she still had her fans.
I'm just saying that you look at this figure and you don't think feminine. And it's top heavy. I mean, there's no curve to it.
So it's gross because you don't find it aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And that's your right. But, I mean, not everyone will feel like that. That's all I'm trying to say. It's, you know, I mean, still look like a woman. I mean, horribly over-muscled, but we're talking about a woman who gets angry like her cousin, and all of a sudden they can break the world if they fart.
Okay, I got a question for you, JT.
All right.
You're a fan of pro wrestling, right?
Yeah.
Remember Chyna in the 90s before she got all her plastic surgery?
When she looked like the daughter of Killer Kowalski?
Yes.
She still looked feminine, but she didn't look like... No,
she
didn't.
She looked like a fucking dude. Everybody was saying that.
So I'm like, supposed to ignore the breasts.
She didn't have breasts, really.
She still more or less looked like a woman. I mean, not the traditional woman. She didn't, you know, she looked definitely more mannish than 90% of the women in WWE. I get what you're saying. I'm just, you know, JT, not.
I'm on the shore and I found your paddle.
I just don't see why, you know, everyone sees things different, and it's not wrong. The way I see it isn't any more right or wrong than the way Ben sees it. I was just trying to understand why Ben was having a problem with it.
Because it's unattractive. No, I'm neutral. You like both of you guys have a point. JT is trying to argue the whole narrative that somebody out there in the entire world of the 9 billion people that are on this fucking planet, one of them will find them attractive. Those same people also find fucking trees attractive. So, that's a moot point.
We're both right and we're both wrong. End of story. I mean, you know, you talk about racism and sexism in comics is what one of the things that I always found, you know, I don't understand it. Maybe you guys can figure out to me is, I like Carol Danvers as a character. Captain Marvel, I enjoy her. She was one of my favorite characters that they used in the new lineup of the Avengers in the Busick Perez run, like post-Heroes Reborn. You know, you have that whole relationship with her and Iron Man, who's an alcoholic, and he recognizes the signs, and, you know, she got drummed out of the Avengers, and then they built on that. And, you know, she sided with Tony during the original Civil War, and then nobody ever, like, sat her down. They just either were against her or they rolled with her in Civil War II. But again, it's predicated on the thing that she was emotionally traumatized because Thanos killed her boyfriend, War Machine. And that's entirely why she went off as crazy as she did with, like, we're going to predict the future. And, oh, you were going to run over that cat. I'm putting you in jail. It's like, I wasn't going to drive today. No, you were totally going to run over that cat. Like, is it sexism or is it just people afraid of being called, labeled as a sexist because you don't like a character or you want to call a character like that on her bullshit?
There was lots of problems with Carol Danvers in the last couple of years. Let me just begin with saying the latest retcon to Carol Danvers' origin where her mom was a Kree warrior, I don't like it. I was okay with her powers being an accident because her powers were basically, let's get things going, here's the first three pages, and then the rest of the issue is about her. Because her being very tangentially, you know, related to the whole Marvel cosmology has very little to do with who she is and what she does. Because she really had no connection to the Kree Empire other than the fact that she was Mar-Vell's kind of girlfriend, sort of, maybe not really.
Gal Friday?
Yeah, and again, I feel like I liked her original character where she was a liaison officer working with, I forget Mar-Vell's original name. Was it Walt?
You know, I've never actually read any of the original...
I believe it was Captain Walt. Mar-Vell. I believe it was Walt. I'm going to probably say the real name in post. But where she was, he's posed as a human scientist, and she was assigned via the Air Force as his liaison to the Air Force, and she was a liaison officer, and she was completely
You're repeating yourself. Okay. Slow down.
And she was not a trained Air Force pilot. She was just an officer that happened to work in a specific branch of the Air Force. I like that because it emphasized that people who are in the military don't always have combat-related jobs. 80 to 90% of the military are logistic jobs that are boring as fuck. And I like the fact that Carol had a boring as fuck military job. I felt like the retcons that happened in the past that made her a pilot took some of that away. I like the idea that here she is, she's basically learning as she's going, instead of she was a military badass that has all this shit going on for her. And if anything, I'd say that when Carol was wearing the Warbird black suit, you know, I'd say that was my favorite era of her because she was a flawed character without a flaw that people would find endearing. The problem was, I remember several times in that era where Captain America actually tried to give her a leadership role in the Avengers and she refused because she outright admitted she knew her limitations and she knew she wasn't leadership material. If I had to give Carol a flaw, if I was ever given the chance to write her, I'd give her the choice that the chance that she knows she's not suited for leadership because she knows she can't ever order a friend to die. She cares about her friends too much. That's her fatal flaw if I had to write her based off of her past and how she acted in the past. So making her a military badass Kree warrior takes away a lot of the meat of who made Carol Danvers interesting to me. And yes, I know she wasn't exactly the most colorful character, and I think that part of Marvel's push to make her Marvel's Wonder Woman has backfired tremendously. One of you guys go.
I'm still wondering how we got to this point when I asked, why is it okay for people not to call Carol on her bullshit in regards to Civil War? Because, I mean, especially in the light of Me Too, is... If anyone, like, I've gotten this hairy eyeball at the comic store when I was talking about that. It's like, no one called Carol on her bull. Everyone called Tony on his bullshit after Civil War. And Tony, to his credit, is like, even after he lost his memory and had to get rebooted post-Siege, you know, he said, I'd do it again because he believed in what he was doing was right. Carol never even had a moment like that where people called her on her bullshit. But... Online and at the store, like I said, people are giving me, I said, like, why did no one call Carol? Everyone's looking at me like I'm some He-Man woman hater. Like, why is it okay for Carol to get a pass like that? And then Tony, everyone's throwing Tony under the bus and calling him on his bullshit. Like, at what point is, you know, dare I say reverse sexism? Because, you know, if we can't do it, we can do it for Tony. We can't do it for Carol, Captain Marvel. Like, why is it okay for us not to call bullshit like that?
It's not okay.
She's protected by the editors. That's why. Because the editors are basically saying Carol has to be right. So, because Carol is going to be the next big movie. That's why.
Well, yeah, but aside from the business thing, Ben, are they saying she's right because, you know, is it just the business thing? Or they're saying she's right because it's a female character, and if we are in any way negative to anything she does, we're going to lose all the readers?
I don't think it's so much you're going to lose all the readers. It's more like our social media is going to be bombarded with people calling us sexist.
People who don't even read the books and buy them.
What's that? You're saying people on the internet that argue against stuff aren't fully aware of everything involved in it? I am shocked at this revelation.
What I'm saying is the people that the editors listen to the most are the people that... are the least likely to buy books now or in the future.
Also, I was looking it up here. Marvel's human ID was Walter Lawson.
I knew it was Walt. But
Mr. Yeah. Black.
But the biggest problem, again, was they're pretty much giving Carol not an exact carbon copy, but very close copy of Walt's powers and origin, etc. now. Even though if anyone who's read Captain Marvel in Mar-Vell's adventures knows that Mar-Vell's powers and abilities were engineered just for him. Not all Krees have the powers he does.
Yeah. I mean, she got her powers originally when this Kree, if I remember, it's some sort of Kree device. I don't know if it was a bomb or something, and Mar-Vell shielded her from the explosion, but the energies kind of transferred. Yeah, made her have
her transfer. How did it explode again?
An explosion?
How did what caused the explosion?
I have no idea. I've never actually read that comic.
Carol caused it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
And the one thing you have to keep in mind is for the first couple of issues when she had those powers, number one, she couldn't fly on her own. She actually made a suit that flew for her. And number two, she wasn't even aware that she had powers. She had a day-night thing going on. Oh, actually, more like the Hulk than the Hulk was for a while, basically, because when she went to sleep, this Miss Marvel personality took over, put on this flight suit, and she went around being Miss Marvel. She wakes up in the day as Carol and doesn't remember it for the first couple issues where she was Miss Marvel.
I've read some of that, like the original Miss Marvel series, and I kind of got more of a Jekyll and Hyde thing with the way she would shift between Carol and Miss Marvel. But, you know, I get what you're saying. But again, it's like you can't... At what point did it become... I mean, it's not okay, but I mean, at what point did that change? Because, I mean, there are people for years have called, you know, BS on stuff that Diana has done in the Wonder Woman comics. You know, and they've always had, like, people, characters there will call BS on that, and then she'll step up and, like, you know, reason with them and explain her position. She might not always turn them to her side, but, you know, at least they write, you know, Sorry, you go, Red?
That's because Carol, unlike Diana, who... Diana is compassionate, she's kind, she's understanding, she's willing to take the time to explain things to you. Carol's a fucking bitch.
She's a hothead, yes.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look, and again, most of the Carol Danvers I know came from, like I said, that Avengers run with Busick and Perez, and, you know, I got to understand why she was like that in that run. But in the years since when, you know, I don't know exactly when it happened in the comics, but when they introduce Carol Danvers in the Avengers Assemble cartoon, she's all this, like, hey, Army, and, like, she's trying to start shit with Captain America, and she's this hard charger, and he's like, you know, I get it done because I can only trust myself, and she becomes, like, once she becomes this pig-headed, you know, go-get-em soldier type, I completely ignore everything, like you said, Ben, they ignore everything that they had with her before, and then that became the norm, and they write Carol as if that's how she's always been. But if you call bullshit on that, as I've said many times, you get the hairy eyeball and you're treated suspect. Now you're treated as the bad guy. But no one's ever not written Wonder Woman like that. Like even in the New 52 series, which I've read a large part of, you know, where she's actually the daughter of Zeus and not just a clay idol brought to life by the power of the gods. She's still a little harder edge, but she still takes the time to, like, talk to people. And, I mean, when did that happen that, you know, women characters either are written as complete bitches or they're thoughtful and contemplative and they'll talk? Like, it's just, I'm surprised somebody hasn't complained about Mary Jane being a party girl and a model in comics history and stuff like that. Really? Because yes. I've never heard of that.
Oh, yeah. I have, too.
Huh. There's a reason why she's been redesigned.
Okay, redesigned how? Like...
Well, she's a lot slimmer. She's a lot less... She doesn't look so much like the voluptuous Mary Jane of the 90s. Or the fucking 60s. Sort of 70s.
She doesn't look like the Romita Sr. version of Mary Jane anymore.
I guess.
That's always been my favorite image. You know, face a tiger, you hit the jackpot.
Kind of like that. She's been slimmed down, made a lot skinnier, in order to be more normal. She's no longer a model or anything like that.
The funny thing is, it's even the same artist that used to draw her. A good example is Ramos. Ramos drew Mary Jane in the 90s and early aughts, and Ramos drew her rather voluptuous, But Ramos recently drew her in the latest Amazing Spider-Man issues, and she is doesn't look like the same person.
Yeah. I mean, then when I think about it, they really kind of not drew her down, but I mean, in the late 90s, in and around the time of the Clone Saga, like where Peter was going for like undergrad work at ESU, and you see Mary Jane, like she very rarely didn't wear anything skimpy. Like it's always like fully covered, or she's wearing like a big old coat on and stuff like that. It's just, it's like, why is it so wrong now? Like, yeah, I understand people not liking it when women are drawn voluptuous and all that, but
non-comic book readers don't like it, and they don't buy issues, so why do they listen to them?
Because they're the ones that run the businesses and control all the money, and they decide no, they don't need to see that. I guess that's it. It's just, I just find out, like, you don't have to like it, but to raise such a holy stink because, Batman didn't hold the door open for Wonder Woman or something like that. And it's just, God, please give me something else to talk about, Red. I'm depressed.
Well, it's a depressing episode.
Yeah. I mean, you look at characters, as far as I'm aware, you look at characters like, Cersei, one of the Eternals that was on the Avengers. I mean, she basically went into battle with nothing less or more than a bikini-style supersuit. You look at some of the costumes, the Scarlet Witch is what, up until like the last 5 years, no one's ever complained about stuff like that. And all of a sudden, it's the worst thing in the world if a, even the classic, like, red and pink, like, Scarlet Witch costume, people have probably complained about that. What's wrong with something like that? She's covered up, shows off some curves, she looks attractive. It's not like, the ultimate Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver who are quite clearly doing it.
I understand where most people are coming from. For years, for many, many years, when you make comics or any kind of media, it's always been understood that sex sells. And there's a new, I don't want to say like the new generation. We'll just say the new attitude that they want to get rid of that. They want to change it. But they're not going to change. They're not going to be able to change. They've already seen that when you change your book, and you go into a more,
mature?
Not mature. A more prudish type of book. The sales just fucking go right down. And right now, Marvel and DC are okay with that. Because they don't want to stir the fucking pot. But eventually, they're going to either change, because they need to change, and start selling books again, or they're going to go under.
Okay, I just thought of something, like, in terms of sex, and like, racism in comics has always been there, and it's, you could talk about, like, Steel, and, like, John Henry Irons and that, but I think it's something specifically, like, people have cried sexism. I don't understand what's sexist about this. People say, I've read online, people have complained that it was sexist. It was sexist for Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle to get married, even though she ultimately, left him at the altar.
That's retarded.
What was sexist about that? Batman loves Catwoman. Catwoman loves Batman.
See, those type of articles, you see them on Facebook and on all the time, Shogun, those are attention getters.
Clickbait.
They're clickbait. Just
as fucking ignore them. There's an Entertainment Weekly about this. We're
still clickbait. Granted,
they are clickbait. You want to know how big media on the web works? Let me tell you, because I actually found this out recently, and when I heard it, I was like, wow, this is a pyramid scheme on top of a pyramid scheme. you have organizations that write news and articles. You wouldn't really call them news organizations. You'd call them media organizations. What they do is they get investment capitals from big investors. And what they do to sell the idea of this is a good investment is they say, we have X amount of impressions a month. And impressions are basically like views. Views with interaction on the website. And they count impressions based off of this. You know those list websites you're talking about with the clicks, like, you know, the top 10 reasons Wonder Woman is blank or something?
Yeah.
There's a reason behind this. Because, you know, you click on it and you click on a slider to see number 10, number 9, 90, number 8, or the list is in two or three parts.
Mm-hmm.
See, you viewing that list is not one impression. It's 10 impressions. So they farm those 10 impressions. And this clickbaity site is also a subsidiary of a larger company like BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed's a good example because BuzzFeed owns a lot of clickbait sites. And what they say is the BuzzFeed network, I'm doing air quotes, BuzzFeed network, is able to say to investors, hey, our network has 3 million impressions a month. Nobody's reading their actual news articles. They're publishing all the clickbait shit as a way to get venture capital investment.
Yeah. I hate bean counters.
But that's how it works. Because that way they're trying to say, oh, don't worry, yeah, the media, the, you know, news organizations are still profitable because we get X amount of impressions, even though they own a site they won't even put BuzzFeed's name on as a clickbait farm. And they're saying that's part of the BuzzFeed network, but we don't can put our name on it, so that way they can pump up their numbers to investors.
Yeah, I mean, it's artificially generated for business, because, you know, controversy is cash, or people make a mountain out of a molehill because they're personally offended by something, but, you know, God forbid other people have, you know, opinions contrary to your own. You know, maybe we talk about racism. I'm going to ask you guys, and then I'll let you know, what was the first, if you can remember, what was the first comic you guys read that made you stop and think about racism, or a comic that was like the first time you saw racism in a comic?
I have a very funny story about that. There was a Neil Adams issue of Green Lantern, a very famous one, where an outraged, angry black man is yelling at Hal Jordan saying, so I've heard that you've saved the purple people with the help of the blue people. What have you done for the black people? And Hal slumps his shoulders down and says, I don't know.
Saved the fucking planet a few hundred times?
In fact, that's funny. For people who don't know, I have a mentor who actually knew Neil Adams, John Byrne, and all these guys. My mentor was an inker that worked at Marvel, did some work for DC in the 80s, 70s, etc. And my mentor said that this issue was a load of horse shit. He said that to me. And let me tell you something else. My mentor was a black man.
Okay, why did he think that was horse shit?
Because what Red just said. How about saving the fucking planet about 20 million times?
Okay. But I know that ish, the one you're talking about, I actually read when DC did those Millennium reprints of classic DC comics in like the mid-90s.
What my mentor really said about this was, here is a white guy trying to tell a black guy how he should feel. And he thought that that was racist as fuck.
No, okay, I can understand that. I mean, I was just going to say, with like, is it so, I'm not saying, like, yeah, that is racist because it's a white guy writing that, and he found that insulting, but if you think about what that character, the way that black man was portrayed, would he not have that attitude? You know, this old guy who clearly had no fucks left to give, and you know, why didn't that guy with the super suit and the fancy ring help us out? Why is he always saving the world?
But yeah. Saving the world does help you out, because without a world to live on, you're kind of dead.
Yeah, no, it's saying. Okay, how about you, Red? What was the first comic, you know, that you experienced racism in?
first comic I've ever experienced racism in. You have to understand, I was a kid and I didn't know it was fucking racist.
All right.
Tintin.
Ooh, I love Tintin, actually.
Racist as fuck. If you ever read the old comics, man. See, okay. my library had a collection of big, giant, fucking Bible-sized Tintin comics.
Yeah, like those magazine-sized ones. I had those in my school, too.
And I'd read those, like, at lunch and shit. And I was a kid, so I didn't know what I was reading was just fucking complete racism.
Okay, well, what was racist in that?
Name a country.
France.
Racist as fuck, because they're all fucking alcoholics. They're all fucking cheese eaters and shit.
Bonjour, you cheese-eating son, the monkeys! But, again, the caricatures in comics of that age don't really reflect racist attitudes in the creators. And I know that sounds...
They're fucking racist!
Well, like, can I give an example? Can I give an example, please?
Okay, I would like... If you somehow defend this position, I will hire you to defend a fucking pedophile as their lawyer.
Okay, okay. Do you know who Will Eisner is?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever read the original issues of The Spirit?
Yes, they're racist as fuck.
Okay.
They have blackface shit in them.
Okay, okay. I told you stories about my mentor. You know, we all know who the one guy was that gave him the first shot in the industry, that gave him a summer job, that got him to put his door.
And you also said Will Eisner wanted to kill your mentor. So move on.
No, that was Wally Wood, not Will Eisner. That was Wally Wood.
Okay.
And Wally Wood had fucking cancer. So I'm not going to excuse all of Wally Wood's attitude. Wally Wood was pretty much a shit personality. But Will Eisner was a gem. Everyone fucking loved Will Eisner.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, Will Eisner was the one who gave my mentor his first shot in the industry. So, and my mentor Wayne.
But the thing is, my grandfather does not hate anybody. Well, when he was alive, he didn't hate anybody of other races. He was raised racist. And that's how his thought process was. He was ignorant to it, but he was still fucking racist. I told you what he named his fucking dog.
Yeah, it's the same thing that H.P. Lovecraft named his dog.
Yeah.
And what did H.P. Lovecraft name his dog?
We can't say it on the podcast.
Okay, you'll have to tell me off mic then.
It's the name of an African country. With an extra continent.
Okay, so that's... Tintin was your... comic book introduction to racism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My introduction to racism in comics was when I started reading Iron Man as a kid in the 90s, was around the time that Tony Stark died the first time, and Rhodey was given control of like Stark Enterprises, and is around the time he got the first time Tony used the variable threat response armor, which is the War Machine armor. And Rhodey was dating this woman, Ray Lacoste or Lacosta. You know, she's this fairly well-to-do woman in Los Angeles. And there is this comment about, you know, she wants to go out with Rhodey and Rhodey doesn't want to go with her because, you know, some people don't, you know, see my skin, and he's like, this complexion doesn't come from copper tone, he says. And I actually went to my dad and I showed him this because I was like,
what does this what mean?
Is he? Yeah. And my dad is like, well, he's a black man, he's dating a white woman, and some people don't like that. They're, you know, and he said, like, they're racist because they don't, like, they can't handle it.
Well, haven't you ever seen Undercover Brother?
Yeah, I love that movie. I'm just saying that's my first encounter with racism in comics. And it was sometime after that, you know, we got into reading Superman. And then knowing what my dad gave me kind of picked up on, like, maybe that's why John Henry Irons went, you know, he has the helmet on and all that. It was such a big thing in the Superman comics when his armor got shredded. he's a black man, you know. And some people can play. I remember people complaining in Wizard magazine back then. I was like, how fucking ignorant do people have to be?
His helmet is the shape of his face. He has big fucking lips on his helmet.
Yeah.
There are people who didn't know that John Henry Irons was black.
That's what I'm saying. His helmet has fucking huge lips on it.
No, it has nothing to do with that, all right? It has to do with they show John Henry Irons pull himself out of the fucking rubble of the building that falls out of him before he becomes Steel. As a kid, when I read that, I put two and two together. I knew that they're the same fucking guy. So people who didn't ever realize that John Henry Irons was black didn't fucking read the comic.
Well, yeah, that's insane. But I mean, as far as racism in comics, at what point? You think of famous characters of color, Sam Wilson, the Falcon, when he first showed up in the comics.
Snaps.
As Snaps, but I mean, when he showed up as the Falcon, I mean, that original, did he have the green and gold Union suit first, or did he have the red and white, and then he got the green one? I honestly can't remember.
I think it was the green one, and then it was red and white, because red and white is his almost standard costume now.
And for years, I wondered if in some way his origin could be considered racist, because technically he got his superpowers from a Nazi. He got it from the Red Skull, and I was
The Nazi called him a strapping buck.
Yeah. I don't think he ever got, was it Schwarze or whatever it is, that word is that Nazis use in a lot of movies and such. But it's stuff like that. It's, is he racist? I had friends a few years ago, we were talking about, racism in comics. It's like, a friend of mine is like, Sam Wilson's origin is racist. And I was like, how is his origin racist? Well, he got his powers from a Nazi. Yeah, that doesn't make it racist.
It makes it problematic.
So, yeah, I mean, it's problematic, but it's not racist. I mean, what characters are straight up racist? I know the argument's been made for the Mandarin, who's one of my favorite Iron Man villains. And I would say late 80s into the 90s Mandarin, where he's got the long flowing robes and he's got the Fu Manchu nails and, looking like an Asian, like the stereotypical Asian supervillain.
And Nicolas Cage as the Mandarin.
Oh, yeah, and that Rob's, was that that she, was it Wolf, Werewolf Women of the SS? That what it was called?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's not, that wasn't, culturally.
The Mandarin does not have shit on egg foo.
Oh, God.
Oh, Jesus, I forgot about that.
Do you remember the retcon on egg foo?
No, first of all, we need, Red, tell the listeners who egg foo is.
He's a Wonder Woman villain, and he's a giant fucking egg with a tiny little body, just like fucking MODOK, and he's got a big Fu Manchu mustache, and he's yellow.
Yes.
And he's got Asian eyes.
And a little hat.
A little hat. Okay, I don't remember the hat. I just remember, he is like DC's answer to MODOK.
No, that's. I thought that was Richard Hammond.
Well, both are kind of, there's aspects of MODOK in both of those. But yeah, egg food, that's.
Now.
And that's more racist than the Mandarin.
JT, tell everyone the retcon on egg food.
I think Red should do that because I know of Egg Foo, but I don't know to which you, what the retcon of Egg Foo was.
I don't know. You have to tell me.
He's an alien creature. Done.
Are you serious?
Yes, he's an alien creature.
Oh, sweet, fragrant Moses.
They're like, that fixed. He's an alien creature. They got rid of the mustache, and he just has like a cracked egg face.
Wow.
I think he actually lives with Harley Quinn now.
It's... Well, I haven't read the Harley Quinn comic in years. But yeah, I mean, I remember reading an article years ago, like, and again, it's one of those click. I don't think all the top 10, you know, are not all of them are clickbaity articles. But they, I mean, all are. Most. Not all of them, most of them, but not all of them. But I was reading this one. It's like the top 10 characters in comics who had were some of the most racist stereotypes at some point or another. And I mean, the Mandarin was up there. I mean, you look at the original Mandarin when he first showed up in the Iron Man comics. He had like this weird purple crown mask thing with, you know, this purple cape and this green tunic with a big white circle with a red M in the middle in case him screaming that I, the Mandarin, you know, if he wasn't saying that every 10 seconds, people might forget what his name is. And then years down the line, you know, he, like I said, he got the, you know, the yellow claw, the Fu Manchu get up, you know, with the 9-inch nails and, you know, looking very proper and everything was Asian themed to some extent. I mean, there are characters who have said, like, or not characters, I've read articles and talked with people, again, a lot of times, where the character of Nuke in Daredevil, some people consider racist. Because he's, like, the stereotype, he's, like, the very definition of an ugly American sort of thing. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah. What I think is you got to stop reading those stupid top 10 fucking articles.
Yeah.
Well, it's either I read that or I read the news sites, and the top 10 articles don't make me depressed.
Put it down, JT. Put it all down.
You're asking me to quit the internet?
No, just stop reading anything about news or clickbait articles. Just look, watch cooking shows, and you'll be a lot happier.
Yeah, but then I get hungry. Anyway, back to Nuke. Do you guys think people that say Nuke is racist, think there's something to that?
No,
it's, I mean, I think the thing is, if everything's racist, nothing is. So I think overall, yes, there are cases of really overt racism in some things, but if you try to look for racism everywhere, you're going to find it everywhere. And I think that outrage culture really creates this thing where everyone has to be outraged over something, you know. Nuke, I don't give a fuck about Nuke, so whatever. And, you know, that's my mentality on it.
You don't think he's racist either, Red?
I don't know. I don't remember Nuke.
Is he the guy with the American flag tattooed on his face?
Oh yeah. Give me a red.
I don't know why. It's not racist.
No,
he's a crazy person.
Again, I'm not. This sounds like shit disturbing when I ask this, but you look over prior to the Riverdale reboot, which is what I call the demarcation where we go from classic Archie to, you know, the modern incarnation of Archie. You know, from like the 90s on forward until the reboot, there was like this marked determination in Archie Comics to introduce ethnic characters. Like before, you know, we had Chuck and Nancy and Valerie from the Pussycats, and from like 1990 onwards you get like Ginger Lopez, and I remember there was a kid of East Indian descent who wanted to be like a filmmaker, and they introduced like some other characters of, you know, different ethnic backgrounds. Is that like a desperate attempt to like forestall cries of racism, you know, oh, there's only white people in Riverdale or something like that? Because I always thought there was something weird about the way they did that.
It was done because people were saying Archie was hokey and too old fashioned. Diversity back then was a thing, but it's not nearly a fucking plague like it is now. So they were trying to be more diverse. Because it's fucking Archie. Everybody in Riverdale is white except for Dilton. Or not Dilton. That Chuck. One kid on... Yeah, Chuck.
And what happened to Eugene from New Archies?
Eugene.
Yeah, when they had the New Archies in the early 90s, they, they didn't use Chuck and Nancy, and they wrote Dilton out, and Eugene was like the new nerd character with, like, he wore a sweater and a bow tie.
I thought that was Dilton.
No, that his name was Eugene, and the black girl who was like his girlfriend was named Amani, or I believe it was Amani, something like that. Because
I think he disappeared when that fucking show was canceled.
Yeah. But yeah. Like,
went
yeah,
up,
they
went up the stairs with Richie Cunningham's older brother.
I thought they actually killed his older brother.
Nope, he just went up the stairs one day and no one ever saw him again.
They actually. What do you call that? Fuck.
What about you?
They made a callback to that.
Oh, yeah?
Like, a few seasons later, they went upstairs and there was a skeleton with Richie's fucking cousin's ball cap on it.
Jesus. That's dark.
Like, in the attic. But it wasn't, like, front and center. It was off in the corner.
Yeah. No. And, again, this isn't a clickbaity thing. I've participated in this discussion on Facebook a while ago. Did you know that some people consider the disappearance of Judy Winslow on Family Matters to be a matter of racism?
That is not a matter of racism. That's a matter of fucking stupidity.
And budget.
I know it is. But because
Judy
Winslow's
fucking mother wanted more money.
Isn't that why they got rid of the first Aunt Viv on Fresh Prince?
Yes. Well, it was also because they wanted to pay Jael White more money because he had a one episode deal, and they're like, we're going to have him as a regular. They need more money for Jael White as well.
The other thing is Aunt Viv was cut out because Aunt Viv was fucking crazy.
She thought the show was about her.
Yes. She wanted to be paid more than Will Smith.
The star of the show.
Yes.
She thought she was the star of the show.
No, I always liked the never mind her mental state. I always liked the second Aunt Viv was just great. I prefer the first Aunt Viv.
The first one was a better actress overall, but she was difficult to deal with.
All right.
I like how fucking Uncle Phil got his job. Do you know that story?
No.
Well, the actor, I forgot his name. What's his name?
James Avery.
James Avery. Came into the interview to get the part. And in the waiting room, Will Smith was just chilling outside in the waiting room. And he was like leaning back with his leg over one of the fucking handles. Or what do you call that?
Chair?
Over the chair armrest?
Yeah, over the chair armrest. And he was kind of, like, his clothes were hanging off him and stuff like that. And then Jamie Avery looks at him and he goes, you know you're not going to get the fucking part if you dress like that. Fucking stand up. Take care of yourself.
You know, straighten up your back. Yeah, I heard that story.
Yeah. I hadn't heard that.
Basically, James Avery didn't know who fucking Will Smith was.
He was basically being a father figure to just this random black kid he met in the waiting room.
And Will Smith just like decided that's fucking Uncle Phil.
Oh, that's cool.
Avery actually was considered quite a gentle giant, honestly. You know, most people thought that, who knew him personally, said that he never raised his voice. He was always very kind and polite.
Yeah, it's one of those, when I heard of his passing, it legit sad, because I always wanted to meet Uncle Phil. Or Shredder, you know, that too. I don't, can you guys think of any other examples of racism in comics?
Well, Luke Cage's first couple of appearances, oh my god.
Well, yeah,
there was a lot in there as well that made people like him, because he had this weird code of honor that he'd fight anyone for an agreed upon amount of money, and if you stiff him on his money, he'll come after you no matter who you were. People like that about him.
Well, I mean, if you could be some guy on the street or the monarch of Latveria, but you better pay what you owe.
Yeah, and he called everyone jive talking turkey. But there were character traits that people liked and gravitated to, and he later evolved into a character with his own friends and credit cards and.
So, I think one of the perfect examples is Dwayne's McDuffie's application to make a new comic before he left Marvel. And it was titled Black Kids on Skateboards. He assembled a team of like five fucking different characters that exist in Marvel that ride skateboards and are black.
The Rocket Racer was one of them, right?
Yeah, and led by Night Thrasher, who was a black guy who rides a skateboard.
He rode a skateboard that had a razor blade built into it.
That reminds me of the razor blade frisbee from Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
Oh, Jesus.
There's another question that Ben brought up a while back. How come all black guys have fucking electric powers?
Yeah. Electro-African American.
That's not all of them, but a startlingly large number when you look at it. But, I mean, you look at, like, you know, you talk about that. That's Black Lightning. Black Lightning and Luke Cage were both answers to the huge blaxploitation boom in the 70s. So, I mean, is cashing in on a popular trend like that, is that racist? Can it be considered racist? I don't think so. There were white guys who created Black Lightning, and they weren't called racist. In fact, they're treated as great creators.
That's not racist. How you handle the character is fucking racist.
Because like I alluded to with Luke Cage, at first when he was created, there were lots of stereotypical tendencies, but there was also character traits that he had that people gravitated to. And that's how he was able to endure and evolve, because of those character traits. I mean, look at Jon Stewart when he first showed up. He was a very...
angry?
Yeah, he was an angry black man, but he also had a really strong sense of justice that people gravitated to and enjoyed. I mean, he evolved, and Bruce Timm making him a Marine really, which was later brought into the comics proper, also was something else that came into it.
One thing that I want to bring up is that there's a new subtle type of racism that's happening in Marvel and DC that nobody ever talks about.
Well, let's talk about it.
It's the new trend of making black characters that are super smart.
Yeah.
It's almost like being smart is supposed to be a superpower for black people.
There are ways of making black characters who are smart without having the eye roll, oh, come on. Henry Irons, you know, he was a weapons designer. He had this whole history. And nobody I knew that was reading Superman at the time rolled their eyes at John Henry Irons being super smart.
Yeah.
What about Michael Holt, Mr. Terrific?
Same thing. Yeah, no one really rolled their eyes at Mr. Terrific. In fact, people loved him because he was a finger quotes legacy character, because he was the second Mr. Terrific, carrying on the name and legacy of the first original Golden Age Mr. Terrific.
Yeah, Terry Sloan.
Not only that, they've also shown that John Henry and Mr. Terrific have both earned their degrees. They earned the right. They proved that they're smart.
Yes.
Whereas you got characters that are like Riri Williams or the new Moon Girl, they're just smart because we said so.
In fact, one of my favorite issues was an original issue back in Return of the Reign of Superman, Return of the Superman. It was this great story where you had John Henry Irons fighting Cyborg Superman in the Coast City Engine City, and John Henry knew the limits of his intelligence. He knew Cyborg Superman was smarter than him, knew more about how this engine worked, and basically tricked Cyborg Superman, telling him enough about how the engine worked that he did a clutch brute force way to stop the engine from firing.
Yeah, wasn't that where he dove inside and gummed up the gears?
Yeah, gummed up the gears, because that was the clutchiest, most brute force way to stop it, but it was also the best way he could figure out with his intelligence. He was a very intelligent man, but he also knew Cyborg Superman, Hank Henshaw, was smarter than him, and he couldn't do it with a tech answer. He had to do it with a clutch brute force answer, which fit his character perfectly. And I love that about him, because it showed, you know, the never give up part. It showed that he understood the limits of his intelligence, And he was still able to make a solution that worked. So that was one of those endearing moments of John Henry Irons for me.
Now, when you talk about Moon Girl and Riri Williams, you know, Ironheart, I don't think it's I agree with what you're saying, Ben. I don't think it's racist, though, or sexist, or what's the word you're talking about when the with the Archie characters read representative diversity. Yeah, like, okay, they're young black women. Okay, there's your diversity right there. They're just naturally smart. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with somebody being just that naturally smart. I mean, that was Tony Stark for years until they made him genetically engineered like Dr. Bashir on DS9. Although Riri Williams, the way they write Riri Williams, I do not care for her as a character, and it's not her skills or the fact she's a woman or the fact she's black. She's just kind of a bitch a lot. I do like Luna Moon Girl because she is, you know, she is naturally gifted. I think it's kind of interesting that we're at. It's like you're a 8-9-year-old girl who is one of the 8 smartest people in the world.
Oh my god!
You know, they
but scientifically speaking, she hasn't had the time in her 8 years to read all the fucking knowledge she needs in order to be smarter than fucking Reed Richards.
Yeah.
Okay.
She just somehow has this information in her brain. Yep.
Okay, but a question about that. You know, okay, we don't accept that about Luna, but we kind of accept that about Donatello, the Ninja Turtle.
Donatello has limits to his intelligence. Donatello, as he was portrayed in the original Mirage books, was a very intelligent person, but he also had limits to his intelligence. He, you know, he couldn't whip out a transporter on his own. He needed help from the fugitoid, Dr. Cunningham.
Yeah. But every other version of Donatello that we've seen, minus the one in the live-action films and that TV show that shall not be named, you know, they are like the original 87 cartoon, the 2003, the 2012 animated series, the Archie comics, the current IDW comics. He's capable of creating transmat portals, the fucking Ninja Turtle van. He, 3 separate occasions, has built Metalhead. You know,
let's rewind a little bit on that, because the 2003 series was very careful about his intelligence. With
the thing is about Donatello, let me explain. It is a moot point because it's fucking bullshit as well. I'm not going to defend Donatello. All
right.
The shit he comes up with is fucking retarded, and there's no fucking way that he learned all this shit from magazines that fell into the fucking
sewer.
Like, what did they live near a fucking university college, and then the fucking entire library was somehow dumped into the sewer? No.
Well, either that or they must live in a prime recycling area, because, I mean, how else do they get these TVs that are not really all that messed up? How are they able to collect enough stuff for recycling to buy food for themselves? You figure they would starve after a couple weeks. But anyway, back to, like, I find it, at least in the character of Lunan, really, I find it a little more acceptable, you know, in the confines of the Marvel Universe, that there could be some other people as naturally, you know, intelligent as, on the same level as Reed or Tony.
The problem is writers confuse intelligence with knowledge. Intelligence, think of it this way. You have a computer, you have a CPU. CPU is intelligence. Knowledge is hard drive. If you don't have anything in the hard drive, but you have a fast CPU, that means you can figure out things really quickly. It doesn't mean you know what stuff is.
Yeah, no, I get you. So, I don't know. Where can we go from here?
Well, Riri Williams is an interesting case. I have to agree that that she just doesn't work as a character. She's extremely offensive. She's extremely rude. She steals. In fact, her origin story is she stole Stark Tech, and later on in an issue, she flies to Latveria and goes to Doctor Doom's castle, and she even says she's looking for Doom Tech to steal. I mean, this is a character who's disrespectful, yet somehow we're supposed to believe that Tony Stark or Tony Stark's AI takes a mentorship role with her. It's very hard to believe with knowing the characters the way that they were. that people True, put although, up with her shit.
Although, if I remember correctly, she didn't so much steal StarTech as she downloaded the design schematics from of Tony's that she found on the internet.
Tony is so ridiculously protective of his design specs. Remember the Armor Wars?
Yeah, I know he's protective, but that doesn't preclude the possibility of somebody hacking Stark Systems again. You know,
he puts back doors in this shit, so just so in the future he has actually done this. When he finds out people are using his tech, he just shuts them down with a flick of his finger, because he started putting back doors in this shit.
Yeah, but there's also the possibility of somebody hacking it, reverse engineering it, you know, changing some aspect of the designs in a way that, you know, when he flicks his finger, it's the same. That actually happened we'll have to get back on topic here. I'll explain the Iron Man thing after we're off mic. So Riri, like I said, yeah, it's just Bendis was going, he was on one of his tangents where, you know, he has this great idea for a character. And I mean, at first blush, okay, it's this young black woman. She's very intelligent. She's a Tony Stark for the new generation. Sure, that's cool. It's just the attitude is he made her a millennial. I don't understand how you could ever consider millennials a being thing, like, especially when you made such a stereotypical millennial.
I wouldn't package all millennials into the same package. He made her the worst part of the millennials. That's what he did.
Well, he didn't make her a coffee-drinking vegan, so maybe not the worst. No. Worst.
Small miracles.
But the worst part about Riri Williams is she didn't work. She got three books in as many years that failed, and they had to reboot them with basically saying new numbering, but it's the same book. And you know, Bendis, when he was done with Marvel, he moved over to DC and recreated her as the new Teen Lantern.
Yeah, but the Teen Lantern's only had like two appearances, so I mean, cut her just a little bit slack.
She duplicated the abilities of a power ring with tech on Earth. And for some reason, the Guardians didn't go raise Earth because of it. That's a lot of plot armor, and that's ridiculous.
Two appearances, and they've barely scratched the subject, Ben. You're not writing the comic. You don't know what they have planned for her.
Red, what do you think?
I think they're going to somehow bullshit to keep her around, which is complete bullshit, because the Guardians scared the Kryptonians into becoming isolationists because they're becoming too powerful. They neutered the Manhunters. They gave the fucking Martians fear of fire. Because they're becoming too powerful. I think they would lose their goddamn shit if they knew that a human was able to replicate their technology. I think there would be no... I think the entire surface of Earth would be turned to fucking glass by 20 different fucking power rings if the Guardians found out about that. But that's not going to happen. What's going to happen is the Guardians are going to find out about it, but it's okay this one time.
Well, the current Guardians in Green Lantern aren't the same Guardians that, you know, pulled all that other bullshit that Red just mentioned. So there's a possibility of that happening, however slight.
I just don't see much good coming from doing this. And again, if you want to do a Teen Lantern, there are ways of doing a Teen Lantern. But she invents the tech in her garage. That's not the way to do it. There's too much continuity there. And you have to basically steamroll the universe you're in to make it work. And that's the subtle racism about it. That you're showing favoritism to this character because of their ethnicity, that no other character with similar circumstances would be allowed to do in the rules of your universe.
No, I get what you're saying.
Because imagine a young Asian boy you know, decides to build his own Stark armor and downloads the thing. Well, he's Asian. That's too on the nose. Asians are already super smart. So Tony Stark shuts him down in the first issue.
So does that, by that reasoning, does that make Amadeus Cho a racist character?
Oh, fuck yeah. In fact, I hate Amadeus Cho. As a Korean, he's horrible. He's horrible. Same with fucking Cindy Moon Silk. Horrible. As a Korean, I am offended by these characters. And I try not to say that often, the as a Korean, you know, phrase. I try not to say that often because I want to also say, as a comic book reader, I find these characters horrible. In fact, I laughed my ass off that one issue of whatever comic it was where Amadeus Cho tried to use "I am the eighth smartest person on the planet" as a pickup line for some, I think it was an Atlantean chick. And she threw it in his face saying, "Well, how do you know that?" And he says, I won it from a cereal box contest or some other shit. And she laughed in his face and I was like, yes, fucking yes. He deserved that shit.
Yeah, that was a crappy origin. I mean, he's proved it since in the comics that he's very a smart character, but I am white. I feel as though I can't defend my appreciation for the character Amadeus Cho without sounding like a big old racist.
Why not?
You're allowed. Go ahead.
You're a human being and you have an opinion.
Go ahead. I'm the only Korean in the room. I don't fucking care.
Young characters who are like smart ass young characters like that who have the mile wide chip in their shoulders, and that's kind of why I like Amadeus Cho. I also kind of like the fact that in his early days and not so much now, that they were working hard to make him the new Rick Jones. Like, he was backing the Hulk up, you know, he believed in the Hulk. And you know, I've said as such online in some forums before, and that and those experiences, and also coupled with the reaction with a Facebook group of a certain podcast I like to listen to, is why I don't comment on web forums about any of this shit anymore, because I really can do without the fucking death threats.
Well, the problem there is commenting on a fucking Facebook group for a podcast, because fandoms are fucking...
Yeah,
retarded.
But that notwithstanding, like, there have been some web forums. Like, I used to be, I'm not saying like I was a constant participant, but I used to be on the Comic Book Resources web forums and Bleeding Cool and even Comic Alliance when that was still a thing. And there was a couple times on Comic Alliance where around the time that they had when Hercules took over the Incredible Hulk title for a while, you know, prior to, like, Chaos War, and they had that huge push to make Hercules a thing in Marvel. And I said, I liked Amadeus Cho, and then, like, 15 people started, you know, literally, I like the character of Amadeus Cho. And the next 15 comments were all these people was like, you can't like that character, he's incredibly racist, or you're a fucking racist for liking him. And I was, no one asked me. It was, like, literally all these responses. No one asked me why I like the character, or allowed me a chance, like Ben did, to explain why I like the character. They just immediately made me feel like, or tried to make me feel as if I was a racist because I liked a certain character. And it's a little, at least for me, because I'm a white guy in this day age of oversensitivity. I mean, I'm a white male, therefore I'm racist and a sexist and I'm pure evil walking, according to 90% of the internet. So I find it really, I'm overly cautious when I comment on this stuff.
Well, here's a question for the group. What was the first time you read a comic that had racism that actually personally offended you?
It's not racism so much, but it's... sometime in the Jim Lee Claremont era of X-Men, and it was one of many issues of X-Men where, you know, you got like the Friends of Humanity or some other Marvel hate group hating on people because they're different. You know, never mind that some of these people can shoot laser beams out of their eyes, or they pop steak knives out of their skin that can slice through anything. It's just this right away, you're a mutant, I fucking hate you, and you should go die in a fire.
I thought you were going to say it was when Brother Power the Geek ate a mayonnaise sandwich.
JT. I never... Yeah.
Have you tried not being a mutant?
Okay, Red, same question to you. Red, same question to you, Red.
Tintin again.
You were personally offended to Tintin, okay.
Because there's... Oh, Tintin goes to America.
Yes.
And they have Native Americans there. And all they do is drink and fucking get into fights. And they're big drunks and all this fucking shit. That's pretty much
where I got it from. I thought you were going to mention that Green Lantern issue.
I never read that until I was an adult.
Okay.
Yeah. And then what about you, Ben? What's a comic that personally offended you in terms of racism or sexism?
When I found out Cindy Moon was supposed to be a Korean, well, number one, because I think it was Ramos who was originally drawing her, and Ramos, for all the interesting dynamic art he can do, can't draw ethnicity worth a damn.
Yeah, I remember his Cindy basically looked like Mary Jane if Mary Jane dyed her hair black.
So when I found out Cindy Moon was supposed to be Korean, last name Moon kind of was a hint because there are lots of moons, but Moon could also be like a hippie name. So I didn't really think that she was Asian or Korean.
So it's a Samoan.
Yeah. So I didn't know until I found out, no, she's supposed to be Korean. And the biggest thing about Korean families is the fact that, especially, you know, young daughters, it's the family's responsibility to protect the daughters. And she had this family that basically up and left and basically was okay with her being gone. And she's basically locked in a vault for most of her life. And they never looked for her. Just her Korean dad's like, okay, she's gone now.
Because, yeah, the way they handled the family
because Korean dads would, like, they would tear apart the earth to look for their daughter.
Well, not just Korean dads, man. Like,
but you know, you get what I mean. Is the culture of Korean families is you protect the daughters, you protect your sisters. You know, it's very protective of the daughters and sisters. So I just found that very problematic. I should say I hate using that word, but it was very problematic.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with X-Men is something I latched onto as a kid. Is just like why I've never understood racism in my life. Like, I understand ignorance to a degree. I understand not liking somebody for any variety of reasons. You know, maybe they're ignorant to you, or they cheer for a different sports team, or, you know, they were really rude. It's just, but to hate somebody because of their ethnicity, the color of their skin, their religion, you know, stuff like that. Well, I'm pretty sure there's somebody in the world that doesn't like me because I enjoy drinking Coke Zero over Pepsi Zero, or Red might not like somebody because that guy eats a different type of pizza than Red does. I mean, that just to hate somebody.
Chew with your mouth open and I'll want to fucking kill you.
I have a very funny story about racism I didn't even know was racism. So Joe Kelly has written lots of books that are hit and miss with me, but I absolutely love Green Lantern Legacy. I read it, and it's a story following Hal Jordan's former sidekick.
Tom Alchemic.
I remember when I was praising this issue, and I kept on calling him Pie Face. I said Pie Face like 30 times in a 5-minute span. And someone contacted me a week later and said, Ben, that's a racist term.
As an Asian, you should know that.
And because
Tom Maku is his name.
I did not know that Pie Face was a racist term. I thought that was just his nickname. And I just didn't know. I didn't know the context of it.
Yeah.
We're bringing it back.
That's so wizard.
She was just looking up here. Tom, like I said, in the Green Lantern movie, he was played by Taika Waititi. I was like, huh. No wonder I thought the director of Thor Ragnarok looked familiar.
But yeah, that's my inadvertent racism story. Red, you got one?
I'm trying to think of one.
Nothing quite as bad as Pie Face, huh?
I have an inadvertent racism story.
Like, oh. I was a dumb kid, so I'm pretty sure I've done things worse than Pie Face. So.
All right, JT, tell your inadvertent racism story, and then I think we'll wrap up.
Oh, yeah, Cracker. Cracker, that's what
it is. Oh, God. Okay, I got to hear the Cracker story first. Sorry, JT.
Yeah, go.
So I didn't know that Cracker was a slur. And my one Caucasian friend, who wasn't like a friend all my life, I just met him in school, I'd say, "What's up, my Cracker?" and shit like that. And I'd call him, like, I'd refer to him as Cracker. Eventually, one day, he just stopped and said, "Dude, that's a fucking racist term. What the fuck are you doing?" So eventually, I just fucking stopped. I didn't know.
I got a story where I wouldn't say it was a racist joke, but I told it to a friend of mine, and he thought it was funny, and he was that ethnicity. So I have a friend who's of Italian descent, and we were talking about ancestry. He says, "Oh yeah, when my grandparents came over, they actually had lots of documentation. You know, they had genealogy and all this stuff about the family." And I said, "Oh, so they had papers." And he laughed, so that was good.
I also did that with WAP.
Oh, God. See, it's okay if they laugh at it.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I know better now. But what's your story, JT?
Yes, my inadvertent racism story. I'm white.
Man.
No. Thank you.
I'm doing the Shia clap, by the way.
Yeah, I know. That's what I thought it sounded like. No, it's apparent. I'm white. Like, I'm absolutely paranoid when I go in the store. I go to the comic store and I want to talk to my friends. I look around to see who's in here. Okay, there are no kids, so I can curse. The owner's gone home for the day, so I can curse a lot. There's no one of color. Oh, good. I won't be called a racist because I'm white. I mean, I work in a liquor store here in Canada, folks. I've been called a racist for refusing to sell something to somebody because they are clearly intoxicated already. I've been called a racist for ordering coffee in the line at Tim Hortons.
Aren't you can just say you're The Rock's cousin, can't you?
Yeah, that's not, I mean, I'm never going to meet the guy, and, you know, technically through marriage I am related to Dwayne Johnson, but I'm never going to meet him, so
do it.
I don't bring it up all that
fucking
often.
Fucking do it. That'd be hilarious if he did that. So, I'm The Rock's cousin. What are you talking about?
How are you related to Dwayne Johnson?
My mom's second cousin, Karen, married this guy named Momoi, who is a full-blooded Samoan, originally from the island of Oahu in Hawaii. He is, I believe, second or third cousin to Rikishi, who is second or third cousin to one Dwayne Johnson, The Rock.
So you're related to Jason Momoa as well.
Technically,
yeah. And you're also related to fucking, what's that wrestler? Roman Reigns?
Yeah.
Wow. So like I said, you could just say that you're The Rock's cousin whenever someone says you're racist. I was like, but I'm The Rock's cousin. How can I be racist? You know,
I really don't know how that would work for me, Ben.
Well,
in fact, somebody would accuse me of pandering and then call me a racist.
Let me put it this way. You're more Samoan then Elizabeth Warren is Cherokee.
Well, good night, everybody. This has been Comic Connoisseurs. We've talked about sexism and a whole lot of racism.
Hey, it's... I'm just saying the truth, man.
Don't even get me started on Elizabeth Warren, man. Just close the show out, please.
All right, well, that was our show. It's your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Red Ink.
And we're saying goodnight.